Hello, everybody. You are listening to my dad on the Handgun World Podcast. Why does he carry a gun? Because he can't carry a cop.
This is Clay from Skilled Gentleman Podcast. You're listening to Handgun World Podcast with Bob Main.
Welcome to episode number 349 of the Handgun World Podcast, being released on Monday, December 28th. This is another one of those episodes I did not think I was going to be able to get published, but here it is. So this is definitely, of course, last one before the end of the year, because next Monday is going to be January 4th, 2016. Happy New Year to all of you. Happy New Year in advance. Hope you guys have some good New Year celebrations. Be safe. Don't do anything stupid. Don't go to stupid places and do stupid things with stupid people at stupid times. I know. Hard to think about not doing on New Year's Eve, right? Just be safe. Use some common sense. All right, so I'm going to talk about small guns, mouse guns, and things like that in this episode. Before I get into small mouse guns and things, there are some videos that were submitted to us for the Shooters Club contest that we recently had. Congratulations to the winners. Those were announced just before Christmas. But I wanted you to hear these videos. I'm going to play the audio portion of these videos. There are some very good questions here that came to us. So let me go ahead and start with Scott from Virginia sent this in.
Bob, this is Scott coming to you from Nelson County, Virginia. Love your podcast. Just have a couple of quick questions. The first deals with training. How much training do you think is really necessary to be proficient in carrying a firearm for self-defense? The second question is, have you ever noticed that with some individuals, they keep on training and training and training, but never really become proficient in anything that they're training? I tend to think of them sort of serial trainers. What's your comments on that? Keep up the good work. Thanks.
Scott, thanks for the video. And, wow, these are some really good questions. Let's see. Let me take the first part of his question. How much training is necessary to be proficient as a concealed carrier? Scott, as much as you can possibly get. That's my answer to that. Now, what's the bare minimum? Well, the bare minimum is not what your state requires to issue you a license. For those of you who live in a state where a license is required. In fact, that's most states. Hey, and by the way, for all my international listeners, I have international listeners that tune in the United States, there are some states that do not require a license to be able to carry a handgun for self-defense, but most states do. You need more than that. I think you need a lot more training than that. You need to at least take something that is more than what the state requires. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why Ben Branham and I decided to call our basic class the Beyond Concealed Carry class, because it's beyond your concealed carry training. That's how we came up with that. Ben and I were coming back from a class a couple of years ago. We were riding in his truck, and we were trying to figure out what we were going to call our class. And I said, well, it needs to be something that is, you know, a training level beyond someone's concealed carry training. And ha-ha, there we go. We got the name, Beyond Concealed Carry. So, Scott, that's my answer. It needs to be people need to have at least one class that's in the defensive use of a handgun. And that's a lot different than what you have to take to be able to get your concealed carry license. The defensive use of a handgun. And there are a lot of good trainers. You know, most of you know I love the training that Suarez International teaches. And they have CRG1, which is a good defensive pistol class. If you're relatively new to this, CRG, close range gunfighting level 1. There's a lot of great trainers out there. There's a lot of good local trainers. I'm thinking about taking a training class that Carl Wren is putting on up in Austin. And I'm probably going to start with his basic level class because I want to take some more of his advanced level classes. And you got to have the basic classes under your belt before you can take the more advanced classes. So I'm going to go ahead and review the basics. I always need to be reviewing the basics. Always need to be reviewing the basics and going back to basics as much as I possibly can. You can't get enough of that. But find an instructor that teaches defensive pistol training. The NRA has some good personal protection classes. Personal protection outside the home. Personal protection, I believe, inside the home. Try to get one or two classes like that, Scott. That's what I think. Now, what about, by the way, so how much, the last thing I want to say about you, about the first part of your question, how much is needed? The real answer to how much you need is whatever it's going to take to prevail if you have to use your gun, right? How many of you would agree? You have to have enough to be able to win the fight. How much is that going to be? I don't know. I can tell you this, bad guys train. I've done this podcast many times and I've done some older episodes. You can go back and you can look at some of the older episodes and go to handgunworld.com and look at my show notes for every episode. And you'll find an article that I got, I'm pretty sure it was from the Buckeye Firearms Association, talking about how much bad guys train. So if bad guys are training, you better be training and you better take some level one, level two, and maybe even some level three defensive handgun classes. Speaking of that, come see us in Houston. For those of you who are near Houston or in Houston or don't mind traveling to Houston, I have decided, I changed my mind a little bit, I'm going to go ahead and do a short trip, two short trips to Houston. San Antonio to Houston is pretty easy for me to travel to. February 20th, Ben and I are teaching Beyond Concealed Carry. That's basically our entry-level class, February 20th. Go ahead and get signed up for that. It's a one-day class, February 20th, which is a Saturday in the Houston, Katy, Texas area. You can find that at handgunworld.com. Ben and myself, Ben Branham from the Modern Self-Protection Podcast, and myself will be your trainers. If you have already taken that class or you've taken another class by a reputable instructor and you want to come to our advanced class, or if you want to take the basic class February 20th, and then that'll set you up nicely for the advanced class April 16th and 17th. April 16th and 17th, that's a two-day class, Saturday and Sunday, Beyond Concealed Carry Advanced. And I think you're going to like both of those. Both of them are going to be in Houston, both of them at the same range. Check them out, handgunworld.com. Okay, Scott, your second part of your question, the training junkies. That's interesting. Or the training. I like what you call them, Scott. Serial trainers. Serial trainers, wow. What is it about the people you're asking that seem to train and train and train and never get more proficient? Good question. Maybe it's because they're not doing everything the instructor asked them to do. Maybe they got substandard instruction. I don't know. Maybe it comes down to a lack of practice. There is a difference between practice and training. When you go to a training class, you learn the techniques. But you've got to practice the techniques. You have to spend, I would say, at least a couple times a month. And by the way, you know what? Practice sessions don't have to be long. You know, I mean, in 100 rounds, you can practice a lot. You know, perfect practice makes perfect. A lot of people say practice makes perfect. No, that's not true, because you could be practicing it wrong. Perfect practice makes perfect. So go to the training class, learn what it is you have to learn, pick one thing you learned in the training class, and 2 weeks later go practice it. 100 to 125 rounds. Doesn't have to be too long. Then pick another technique, and 2 weeks later go practice that technique. Another 100 to 125 rounds. Or 100 to 125 repetitions. Maybe it was a dry fire technique that the instructor taught you. How about that for an idea? What do you think? Scott, maybe that kind of gives you the answer to the second part of your question. So thanks for sending us that video. Way to go. That was a video that he sent in, and I pulled the audio out of it. All right, now let's go to Bobby in DFW, Dallas-Fort Worth.
Hey, Bob. Just wanted to say thanks real quick for putting out your podcast. It's really helping me to learn and get ready to conceal carry. In regards to your question about the new Texas gun laws, I'm here in the DFW area and just attended a CHL class this last Saturday where they had a lawyer from Texas or from U.S. Law Shield that explained to us that with the 30-06 and 30-07 signs, they have to have both of those posted if they want to keep that establishment a gun-free zone. So if they just have the 30-06, you can open carry. If they just have the 30-07, you can conceal carry. So they have to have both of those posted on every entrance to ban both types of carry. She also explained a lot about how there's some uncertainty with open carry, what's legal and what's not. And she got into campus carry, which I'm excited about. That'll be coming in August. So if you have questions about that, let me know. But I just wanted to say thank you for what you're doing and have a great day.
Well, Bobby, thanks again for the video. And again, folks, that was the audio portion. Wow, sounds like it's going to be a lot more difficult for establishments and businesses to create a gun-free zone. It's going to be a lot harder for them to make their place a gun-free zone, which I think is good. Now they got to put up both signs in the state of Texas. Don't you love Texas? Don't you love the gun-free state of Texas? I know a lot of you are not from Texas, but you know what? We do take carrying guns seriously here. I know it took us forever to come up with open carry, but now, hey, by the time this podcast releases, it'll be less than a week and open carry is going to be legal in the great state of Texas, New Year's Day, January 1, 2016. And as you heard, campus carry is going to be legal. And it's actually, the law has been passed. It's going to be taking effect pretty soon. I think it's summer of 2016, if I'm not mistaken. But Bobby, thanks again. Bobby from DFW, thanks for sending that in. He was responding to a question that I put out a few weeks back on another podcast episode that I did about the two different signs, because there are two different signs that they have to display in the state of Texas, the only legal signs that carry the weight of law. All right, let's now go to Andrew. Andrew sent us a video with a really cool question. It's a interesting question that has caused me to think for a long time before I answered it. I touched a little bit upon this in last week's episode, but let's go ahead and listen to exactly what he asked.
Hey, Bob and Ben, thank you so much for everything you do. I was just wondering if every sign you encountered everywhere you needed to be was like a 30-06 or a 30-07, would you carry if everywhere had signs like that? Would you keep your gun in your car always, or would you go ahead and say, my Second Amendment rights supersede their signs? Thank you very much, and God bless you and your families. And you guys have a fantastic podcast. I look forward to it always. Thank you. Bye.
Andrew, once again, thanks for the video, and thanks for the question. Towards the end there, you asked if we thought that our Second Amendment rights would supersede a property's right to post a no guns, the proper no gun sign, and create a gun-free zone. You know, I do not believe that it would. I do not believe that our Second Amendment rights, because I don't think that they would trump their property rights. It's about property rights, and people do have property rights, and they have the right to create a gun-free zone in their building if they are the owner or the manager of that building. Doesn't mean it's right, but it doesn't mean it's the correct thing to do. It doesn't mean that I agree with it. Matter of fact, I don't like it. I don't like the fact that a property owner has the ability to deny my Second Amendment rights when I'm on his property. But you know what? I'm not obligated to go on his property. I can choose to go somewhere else. The only problem I have with it, and I've said this many times, Andrew, in many other episodes, I do have a problem with a business that is employing the general public. In other words, they're employing people people that are coming from the general public. It's not a it's not an extremely private dwelling. I'm not talking about a place like a person's household. Okay, that's an extremely private dwelling, typically restricted to only family members. But, you know, you take a large employer, for example, or really any employer that are creating jobs and employing the public. Now what you're telling people is you're going to say, if you make your business a gun-free zone, here's what the business owner is really saying. Okay? Stay with me on this. The business owner is really saying you don't have a Second Amendment constitutionally protected right, sir or ma'am. You don't have that right anymore when you're on my property. Now think about this. These are rights that are so-called protected by the Constitution. However, the Constitution, it limits the federal government. What it really does is it limits what the federal government can and cannot do. So basically the Second Amendment is saying, you can't, hey, federal government, you can't take the gun rights away from individuals. But a piece of property is not the federal government, is it? So that's why a piece of property of the owner of a building or a piece of property, because they're not the federal government, that's why they can, yeah, in effect, deny your Second Amendment rights. But if you're employing people, you're telling people you have to get a different job if you want to carry your gun. I just think that's a little over the top. I really do. I really think that that's a little over the top. Just my personal opinion. I know what a lot of you are thinking. Bob, it doesn't matter if you think it's over the top. They have a property owner right to deny your Second Amendment gun carrying rights. And yeah, by the letter of the law, that's true. Does it make it a good thing? No. But you know what? We don't have a perfect system. So I guess you can choose to work somewhere else. It's not that easy to do. I've said that many times. It's not that easy to do to just go find another job, especially in today's economy. A lot of people just can't just go find another job, or maybe they're not willing to go find another job in order to carry their gun on the job. So, you know, In the first part of your question, Andrew, when you asked if we see a 30-06 or a 30-07 sign basically prohibiting carry, would we carry there anyway? I am not going to advocate breaking the law, and I'm not going to say whether I have or have not broken that law. I will tell you this. I recently took my son to a theater to see the opening to see Star Wars, The Force Awakens on opening night. We went on opening night, and we had to use a theater that had the 30-06 no gun sign. So did I carry? I'm not going to say whether I did or whether I didn't. It was a packed theater. It was the opening night of Star Wars, The Force Awakens. Phenomenal movie, by the way. Awesome. I'll leave it up to you and your imagination to figure out, did Bob Main value his life enough to carry, or did I say, you know what, it's a gun-free zone, I'm making the choice to go there, it's a theater that I don't have to go to, I could go to a different one, so I'll choose not to carry. I'm not going to say what I did. And Andrew, that part of your question is a real tough one. Hopefully I sort of answered it. Okay, just a quick break, and the main topic of mouse guns is coming right up.
An Australian law enforcement officer called their gun registration, quote, an elaborate system of arithmetic with no tangible aim. They also called its crime control use a fallacy. New Zealand police call their gun registration system useless. Canadian registration has cost 1,600% more than originally projected, and a top Canadian cop said it does nothing to take one illegal gun off the street. And in Germany, some people estimate that upwards of 80% of all guns there are still not registered. So why do some senators, and some presidents for that matter, think that it will work in America? Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
In this segment of the show, I want to cover a little bit about small guns, since one of the topics here is about small mouse guns. And a lot of people are carrying small guns, right? How many of you have a small gun? You know, they're commonly called mouse guns or pocket guns. One of my favorites is the Car P380, Car Arms P380. They make a little bit less expensive version, the CW380. A lot of you have Ruger LCPs because they're probably the most popular little pocket mouse gun on the planet. Ruger seems to have sold a lot of those. It seems like it all got started by Kel-Tec. Kel-Tec started making the P380, as in 380, right? But, you know, Kel-Tecs are good, and then all of a sudden everybody started getting into them, and Smith & Wesson's making the little Bodyguard 380s. What else is out there? There are little Taurus 380s, but I don't have much experience with those. There are, well, even, you know, there used to be things like little Seacamp 32s, Kel-Tec 32s. Seacamps are not really made by Seacamp anymore. John Payne from Suarez International really likes his. He's bragged about his for a long time. He's in fact even talked about it during the last interview that I had with him. He calls it the Rolex of pocket pistols. And let's see, what else is out there for little tiny guns? There's always been the J-frame revolvers, although those are a little bit big for some pocket carry applications. Yeah, you can carry those in a pocket, in a good pocket holster, but I think they're a little big for some pocket carry applications. I mean, right now, for example, I'm wearing, you know, khaki dress slacks and a dress shirt because I'm on the way to a sales call. And that's just a little bit big and bulky for me to slide a J-frame revolver into my pocket. But my Car P380, since I'm having to wear a tucked-in shirt today, it fits in my pants, in my pocket holster, nicely. Now, the draw is a lot slower. And this is one of the disadvantages. And so one of the thoughts I want to cover with you is just my opinion, but you might get something from this. If I were you, I would try to avoid, as much as possible, avoid sliding a 380 into your pocket. Make sure you use a pocket holster, by the way. Don't ever do it without a pocket holster. Now, here I am telling you to avoid it, but I'm doing it. But yeah, it's very rare. It's very rare that I do this. With all the cool small guns out there, the Car PM9s, the Glock 43s, the Smith & Wesson Shield, the Springfield XDS, the Glock 42s, the Ruger 380s, the Ruger LC9s and all that, with all the really nice, slim, single-stack, 9mm small guns that are so easy to conceal, you know, it just kind of makes me wonder why would people carry a 380 auto in their pocket, in a pocket holster, most of the time. Yet I hear about that. I hear people saying, well, my carry gun's an LCP. You know, where, I mean, and they own all these other guns. They own all these full-size Glocks and 1911s, and they own all these big guns, and they go to competition matches with the big guns, and they go to training classes with the big guns, but then they slide a 380 in their pocket. And I also hear them say things like, well, I don't shoot that little 380 much. They don't shoot it much. I'm thinking, what? What do you mean? You're using this tool to defend your life, and you don't shoot it much? What's up with that? Folks, go out and shoot your little mouse guns. shoot them and shoot them a pretty significant amount. You know, there's several reasons for that. Small guns tend to be pretty finicky with ammunition. And you've also got to have the right technique in shooting a small gun. You've got to be able to have good grip. You've got to be able to have the right technique. A lot of these small guns really, they rely on the fact that someone knows how to shoot them well, or they jam. They're notorious for being jam masters if you don't know what you're doing when you shoot these little guns. So you may have one 100% reliable. That's great. If you got one 100% reliable, God bless you. I'm extremely happy for you. They're also typically not very easy to shoot and be accurate with them because they've got short sight radiuses. Some of these guns don't have much for sights at all. And of course, most of you probably know what I'm going to say next, don't you? If it's 5 yards or less, you're probably not going to be completely using your sights to make a decent hit. And you know what? I'm going to say this. I hope I don't offend you. Please, I don't mean to offend you on this show. I just want to give you some things to think about. Is that okay? I just want to get your mind thinking. If you have to use your sights 100% of the time to make a 5-yard hit, please come to training class. A good defensive training class. Or go participate in a bunch of competition matches with your little mouse gun. You should be able to make hits. That's only 15 feet, folks. It's not very big or very far. 15 feet? And when I say hit, I mean making a quality torso shot. That's what I mean. I'm not talking about a 2-inch group with a little mouse gun. I'm talking about just a decent torso shot. Now, I'm not talking about a 12-inch group either. That's too big. That's too much. You know, I'm talking about a reasonable 4, 5, or 6-inch group with regularity hitting a target the size of a human torso at 5 yards or less. That's what you should be able to do with these little mouse guns. You know, typical gunfight distances. You know, let's stretch it out to 5 to 7 yards. Let's just say, for example, that typical gunfights are 5 to 7 yards. Okay, some people say 3, some say 5, 7, whatever. But you need to be doing that. So I'm not gonna be naming names or you know, talking about who it is that I'm referring to, but I'm hearing people say things like, "Well, I carry this small little pocket 380, but I don't shoot it much and I don't practice with it much." You know, the last competition match that I shot, it was about a week and a half ago when I interviewed Ted Bonnet from AASA. You just heard that interview last week. A guy there was shooting that match with his Smith & Wesson Shield. I thought that was really cool. That was good. That was good. He was not as good as everybody else shooting their big, you know, fancy schmancy competition guns. But he was practicing with probably what he carries the most, the Smith & Wesson Shield. Ben and I have had plenty of people come through our Beyond Concealed Carry and our Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced and Advanced classes with small guns like Shields, Glock 43s. Up in Ohio, we saw a Glock 43. An owner brought a Glock 43 through our class. Plenty of people have brought XDSs. Smith & Wesson Shield, 9s and 40s. It's great. I'm glad. I'm glad people are out there practicing with those. So don't, you know, when you have to pull your little pocket 380 or 32, or if you're carrying a J-frame revolver, you got to pull your little 38 special pocket gun. Don't let that be the first time you shot it. You need to make sure, first of all, that it properly feeds and works with the ammo that you like to use, the defensive ammo. As I mentioned earlier, a lot of these guns can be pretty finicky. How many of you have noticed that? How many of you have a gun like this and you went out to the range and had a hard time getting it to work well? Now, I like my Kar P380. Very strongly considering getting a second one because I always like to have two of my favorite guns, right? One is none and two is one. I have actually more than two Glock 19s because it is my all-time favorite gun. I have two Smith & Wesson Shields because I love it so much. Even though I gave one to my son, you know, I can access it any time I want because I have full control over that gun until I feel that he is old enough to have full control over that gun. And I don't believe that he's there yet. And I have, let's see. Well, that's it. Those are the only ones that I have multiple examples of. But I'm very seriously thinking about either getting another P380 or the little bit less expensive version, the Car Arms CW380, just because it's a it would be a carbon copy backup. Not a carbon copy, but similar enough to back up just in case my P380 went down and I needed to have a pocket gun for some reason. Now, what about Glock 42s? Well, I love my Glock 42. My Glock 42 is not too big for a pocket gun, but it's significantly larger than a something like a P380 or an LCP. I carry my Glock 42 mainly when I want to have a small inside-the-waistband pistol. And I love the Glock 42 because I love shooting it. I love shooting it. And that's the other thing you have to think about, is what is this gun going to be like when I shoot it? So many people just limit themselves to, what is this gun like when I carry it? Right? You know, and I'll be guilty of that. I'll go ahead and raise my hand right now and say, I've been guilty of that, of only thinking about, what's it going to be like when I carry this gun? And I forgot to think, what is it going to be like when I have to shoot this gun? I know you might be saying, Bob, come on. The chances of us having to actually pull our guns out and shoot somebody in self-defense is very, very, very slim. Yes, I agree. It's very, very, very slim chance that you're going to have to do that. But you know, then why are you doing this? Why are you carrying? Why are you listening to my show? Why did you get your concealed carry license if you live in a state where you have to get one? Why? Why? Because you want to be prepared. Because you take your self-defense seriously. And if you're going to take it completely seriously, you're going to think about what happens if I have to shoot my gun, right? So that's what I love about the Glock 42. In fact, if I want a small inside-the-waistband gun, even smaller than a shield, I'll most likely carry the Glock 42. The Glock 43 is a decent gun. I love the Glock 43, but you know what? If I'm going to carry my Glock 43, then I might as well carry my shield, because the shield holds more than one round. It's not that much harder to conceal. Matter of fact, in my opinion, it's no more difficult to conceal than a Glock 43. And I know that there are magazine extensions that I can purchase for the Glock 43. I know that. Suarez International makes plus two magazine extensions. Terran Tactical, of course, has their plus one and plus two. And I believe Pierce, if Pierce is not already making a plus one for the Glock 43, they probably will soon. That's all fine and dandy, and if it has to be a Glock for you, then do that. I like to keep factory parts on my carry guns as much as I can. That's just my preference. I like to keep factory parts for a number of reasons, not just liability. But here's something else to consider. Gun manufacturers want to make guns that work, and they do, for the most part, make guns that work right out of the box. So as you take them out of the box and you shoot them, they work. And today's polymer striker-fired guns are very good at that. They're very good at being extremely reliable right out of the box. And reliability is king. It's king. It's the most important thing in a defensive handgun. Would you agree? You got to have ultimate reliability. So I really believe that making sure that you keep factory parts on your gun as much as possible is utterly important. So again, the Glock 43, I own it. I'm not going to get rid of it. Occasionally I carry it, but most of the time, if I want a small single-stack gun, that is really easy to conceal, that's going to be either inside or outside my waistband, that's going to be a Smith & Wesson Shield if it's not my beloved Glock 19, which my beloved Glock 19, which I have, okay, I'll go ahead and tell you. I got three of them. They are my primary go-to gun. But anyway, back to these mouse guns, since that's what I'm talking about. This is kind of like mouse guns revisited, because I've talked about these small guns many times, but I wanted to add some thoughts on them. They also, you can be extremely accurate with these little guns. Have you noticed that? It's the modern technology has really given us the ability to be extremely accurate with these little guns. Even something like a Ruger LCP. Now, accuracy is one reason why I really like the Carr P380. I understand that accuracy is largely subjective to the person shooting the gun. I get that. And some of these small guns are easier to shoot than others. It's one reason why I give a huge thumbs up to little Carr Arms 380s. This little P380 is an excellent shooter, and it's easy to shoot. The trigger, even though it's a long trigger pull, it's very smooth, and it's very easy. And, of course, it doesn't even have a 1,000-round trigger job yet. Once it has my famous 1,000-round trigger job, it's going to be even smoother. Yeah, I know. Occasionally I carry a gun that doesn't have a 1,000-round trigger job. Not very often, but yes, occasionally I do. I intend to give this P380 a 1,000-round trigger job or finish the 1,000-round trigger job. I've started it. I intend to finish it pretty soon. But it's really easy to shoot. It's got real sights. So in case I do need to use my sights, it's got real sights. I can buy 3-dot night sights for a Carr Arms pistol. And that's one of the things I like about it, too. It's a little pocket 380 that I can buy night sights for. I can buy 3-dot night sights. So I think that's an important consideration. I would not get any gun that is a pocket gun or a little mouse gun that you couldn't at least change out or improve the sights somehow. I'm not a big fan of these guns that don't have any sights on the slide or have little nubs that are called sights. Yes, I know if you perfect your shooting skills, you can be quite effective. You know, in fact, we heard John Payne talk about, you know, how he shot qualification, and he qualified with his little C-Camp P32, or his little C-Camp LWS-32, excuse me. However, you know, not everybody is at that skill level, so another reason why I give a thumbs up to guns like Glock 42, guns like Carr P380, Smith & Wesson Bodyguard 380s have decent little sights on them as well, and it makes a decent little pocket gun. Yes, triggers are typically pretty horrible, but that's one of the reasons why I like thumbs up to Glock 42s and Carr P380s or CW380s. And even some of the Taurus guns, I got to admit that their triggers are pretty decent, the little Taurus 380s. You know, it makes a huge difference, folks, when trying to shoot these guns. So please, please make sure that you think about what if I have to shoot this gun and I have to use it to defend my life. I happen to believe that if you can get the job done, if you practice enough and you can get the job done and you can put the rounds where they need to go in a defensive situation only, remember, defensive situation only. We don't want to be offensive. We don't want to live by the sword. We just want to use our swords or our guns to defend our life or the lives of others. That you need to be able to perform with it. So are you going to training classes with them? And are you practicing with them? That's, you know, just something to think about there. All right. Quick little break or something like that, and I will talk about the next subject. Thanks.
Hello, I'm Rob Morse from the Polite Society Podcast. I took a Beyond Concealed Carry advanced class with Ben Branham, Bob Main, Chaz Murray, and Tracy Thronberg. I wish every concealed carrier took a class like this one. The class covered both basic shooting skills and advanced topics. Skills like shooting from unusual positions, shooting with one hand while moving, and shooting when in contact with the target. Those are the real skills you want if you were ever forced to use your firearm. I was impressed because I'm not the perfect student. No, far from it. I took the class because I needed competent instructors to teach me and correct my many mistakes. They did that with professional skill. I plan to train with them again.
Okay, something else I want to say about pocket guns or mouse guns. You know, if you're pocket carrying, it does severely slow down the draw. So you got to be aware of that. You know, you have to understand how much slower is it going to make you? And how is that going to impact your ability to defend yourself? You need to determine that. You need to practice drawing. Make sure your gun is unloaded and practice drawing that gun out of your pocket in many different ways. Practice drawing that gun out of your pocket when you're sitting. A lot harder than when you're standing, isn't it? You know, practice all different ways and carry it in different pockets as well. You know, you never know where you might have to put that gun and carry it, and you got to practice drawing it as well. But mouse guns have proven to be a very useful self-defense tool. There are plenty of defensive gun uses where someone used a little 380 to defend themselves. There was a story recently, and I'm going to try to look it up and put a link in the show notes. It was a fairly high profile, I think it was a reporter of some kind, fairly high profile, famous reporter or somebody like that. And she and her husband had used a couple of 380s, I think, to defend themselves against some intruders that were trying to come into their hotel room. And they had little 380 guns. So, you know, whenever somebody starts with this nonsense saying, I don't carry a 380 because a 380 is not effective and it'll just piss them off and it's not a really serious defensive caliber, blah, 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 blah. Don't listen to that junk, folks. There's a lot of really good ammunition out there today. I just ordered some 380 ammo from Double Tap. Double Tap Ammo makes some very good 380 ammo, and they're not the only ones. A lot of people make excellent 380 ammo, and the ammo is now designed for small little mouse guns, short-barreled guns, to provide good expansion and good penetration. So any of these jokers that start knocking the 380 and talking about how, you know, a real man wouldn't carry a 380, let's see if we can do some ballistics testing on some of these knuckleheads that talk like this and see what they think of the 380s. Would they really want to get shot with one? And okay, nobody wants to get shot with anything. I understand. So you know what? What I'm going to say to some of these chest pounders that talk about how a 380 is not effective. How much testing have they done on it? That's what I would like to know. How much testing, and let me see their data. Let me see the data of their testing and how awful it is. With today's ammo out of a good quality gun, let's see how awful it is. Show me. I want to see it. You know, I'm not from Missouri, but sometimes I kind of like to have that Missouri state attitude. You know, show me. Show me the show me state. Show me all this terrible performance data from today's modern 380 pistols with good quality 380 ammo. Put some Double Tap or Underwood ammo in there or Buffalo Bore, whatever. You know, good stuff. Even federal HSTs, good stuff. Put some good ammo in there, do some testing, and then let me see it. Otherwise, be quiet about 380s. They've worked many times to defend people's lives. 32s have worked. 32 ACP, a very underrated cartridge. So, anyway, that's all I want to say about people that knock those. And I think they just kind of bloviate like Donald Trump. And they don't really, maybe don't have a whole lot of stuff to back up their claims. Hey, by the way, since I brought up Trump, and I don't like to talk about politics too much, but in one of my recent episodes I said something about libertarians, and I got a couple of emails about it. You know, I was basically telling libertarians out there that, hey, sometimes we got to fight a war. Sometimes war does make peace. One of the challenges I do have with some libertarian people, not all, but some libertarian people, is they're completely anti-war. You know, completely anti-war. No war whatsoever for any reason. I mean, a lot of them are that way. Maybe you're not. Maybe if you're a libertarian friend of mine and you're listening to this show, I don't like to talk too much about politics on this show, but I do want to correct something that I said. And that is, you know, one of the libertarian listeners sent me a message saying, Bob, we do believe in war when there is a threat, a direct threat to the United States. Well, let me ask my libertarian friends something. Don't you believe that ISIS is now a direct threat? Don't you believe that radical terrorists, are a direct threat after San Bernardino? Don't you think that radical terrorists... How about, let's go back to 9/11. How about 9/11 and San Bernardino? Don't those two events really... I mean, how could you not say, especially today, in December 2015, how could you not say that radical terrorism is not a direct threat to the United States? So we have got to go to war against these people that want to kill us, and we need to defeat them. And so if you're a person that is anti-war at all times, what would you say about that? I mean, come on. And maybe you are in agreement with that, and so send me an email if you want, bob@handgunworld.com. That's bob@handgunworld.com. If you want to send me a voicemail, 210-646-1727. You got 3 minutes or less to send me a voicemail, and you can comment that way. 210-646-1727. I'll put you on the show unless you specifically tell me not to, and I'll probably respond if you have a question or whatever. I'd love to get it. And congratulations, by the way, to the winners of our Shooters Club contest. The one winner of the XDS pistol. Ben and I announced that just recently. Congratulations, and the holster giveaways and all that. So I think we will probably be doing some more of that coming up. Hey, by the way, I am going to travel a little bit. I changed my mind a little bit, and I'm going to travel just a little next year to teach some classes. Ben and I realized we have not taught an advanced class in Houston. We've had a lot of Houston folks come to our classes, but we haven't actually gone there to teach an advanced class. So I want to officially announce Beyond Concealed Carry Advanced, April 16th and 17th in Houston, 2016. Advanced means you have to have either completed our Beyond Concealed Carry class, or any other training is acceptable. Any other training from a decent, you know, trainer, or somebody who's a real trainer. You want somebody who's certified, like NRA certified, or things like that. You know, or if you have local trainers that put on regular classes and you've been through their training. I guess what I'm trying to say is that we can't have beginners at our advanced class. You have to be proficient at being able to draw your gun safely, fire rounds down range, and you need to do some practicing of that before you come to Beyond Concealed Carry Advanced. And bring along a certificate, a completion certificate, from whatever class that you have taken. But join us. Two-day class, Saturday and Sunday, April 16th and 17th, 2016, Beyond Concealed Carry Advanced. You will like it. Ben Branham and myself will be your instructors. We're going to teach things like one-handed shooting. We're going to teach things like shooting from very unconventional positions, like how to shoot, well, you know, if you're on the ground, how to shoot to a standing position, how to shoot from prone, how to get better at shooting from kneeling. We're going to teach one-handed manipulations and malfunctions, one-handed reloads, one-handed malfunction clearing, and we're going to teach you how to do it with both hands. You're going to be shooting a lot with your right hand and with your left hand. We're going to teach you how to make hits on your target out to 5 yards without using sights. Regular, good quality hits without using sights and all that kind of stuff. So I think you're going to really like it. This is one of the very few times in 2016 that I'm going to hit the road. And of course, it's not very far. San Antonio to Houston is not very far. It's a 3-hour drive. for me. So I don't have to spend a whole lot of time away from my family to teach this class, which is why I agreed to do it with Ben. So go to handgunworld.com. I've already posted the class on the website for you to sign up. And you can sign up there, handgunworld.com. You'll find the April 16th and 17th Beyond Concealed Carry Advanced. So for all of you Houston area folks that have been supporting us, we love it. Thank you very much. We are now coming to your town to put on the advanced class. Okay. Just a real quick break. Like, probably 15-second break, and I'll be right back. Well, in closing, let me just say, please support my show. Continue to use my Amazon store. A lot of you did it this past month. I'm sure a lot of you were doing your Christmas shopping on it. If you're going to buy something on Amazon, just do three quick steps. Go to handgunworld.com, step number one. Go to the Amazon store, step number two, and click the Amazon link, step number three. That'll take you, what, 5 seconds? And you will help support the Handgun World podcast. Amazon will pay me a commission, and you don't even have to spend any extra money. You can also watch 57 or 58 videos. Just released a couple of more new videos on the Shooters Club for only $8 a month, 14 cents a day, ladies and gentlemen. Or save some money and sign up for a year at $75. $75 for an entire year. It's a password-protected video site. Excellent instructional videos that Ben Branham and I have put together. Some of the videos come from our classes. Some footage from our classes as we were teaching them. Good stuff there. And don't forget about following me on Facebook, facebook.com/handgunworldpodcast. If you want to search Handgun World on YouTube, I got a new YouTube video out there. I'm Handgun World on Twitter. And there's all kinds of good ways to follow me or just simply call into my voicemail, 210-646-1727. That's 210-646-1727. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Remember, evil does not exist in the holster. It exists in the hearts of men and women. I'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.